Well, if you are here with us and if you are brand new with us, we are so excited to have you here. This is a great time to jump in with us. You know, the school year's starting, life groups are starting, so we're just happy to have you. We're actually in part four of our series that we've been going through called Divine Wrestling, where we've been looking at some major, really incredible stories, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, about people who in one way or another wrestled with God. And we know, we said, that sounds so absurd, but we said so many of us have done that in one way or another as well. And so maybe you've done that in your life, maybe you are in the midst of doing that right now, and if you haven't yet, let me just promise you this, you probably will someday in your life wrestle with God in one way or another. But we said that is okay, that's actually sometimes very good to do, because through wrestling with God, we get to hear and know God's heart. We get to kind of see ourselves as well, and as we're going to talk about this morning, it actually has a way of changing how we view our circumstances. Because when we really think about divine wrestling, when I think about the times that I've wrestled with God the most, in the most kind of impassioned and kind of most emotional times, it really kind of always revolved around my circumstances of life. And chances are, the reason that you're probably wrestling with God right now, if you are, is because you want God to do something and want to change something in your life. Maybe you have a problem, maybe something that is troublesome, maybe something that is stressful for you, and you're asking God, you're wrestling with God to do something, to change something, because whatever it is isn't changing. Whatever it is isn't going away. And so you are doing the only thing that really what you feel like you can do left is just kind of wrestle with God and say, God, do something, do something, do something. For some of you, maybe it's a marriage. Maybe you're in a marriage right now where it's just very, very hard, and your spouse isn't doing what you were hoping that he or she would do, and it's every day, it's constant kind of back and forth, kind of bickering, and it's just not getting any better. And so you're kind of wrestling with God, God, do something about this. Maybe for you, you have a child who's not really a child anymore. Maybe they're an adult, and they're making decisions that you wouldn't make, and you're just kind of, it's painful to even watch them go down that road, and you're just begging and pleading, God, God, do something, change these circumstances. Maybe for some of you, it is maybe a financial situation where the burden of finances, the bills, maybe because of health issues or whatever, it is so hard to just have enough to make sure everyone gets what they need, and it's just never enough, and you can't dig yourself out of this hole, and so you're just praying and begging, God, God, do something. Maybe for some of you, it is a health issue, and I know maybe times this is one of the biggest reasons, you know, why we wrestle. God, it's a health issue, and God, it may be that you got a diagnosis that isn't going to kill you, or at least kill you right away, but it's something that is chronic, something that is debilitating, something that is hindering, you know, just getting up in the morning and having the energy, having the kind of life that you want, and it's so hard because it's not going away, and maybe it's not even you who has it. Maybe you are a caregiver of somebody who has something chronic, something painful, and it's just not going away. It is not getting any better, and every day you got to wake up, and every day are the same issues and the same problems, and so you're wrestling with God. God, do something. Just do something. For some of you younger folks, maybe it's something that has to do with academics, right? In academics, your academic career isn't going the way that you hoped it would go. It is not going the way your brothers and sisters had it go. And so now you're kind of wrestling with all this and things aren't getting any better. And you're just struggling too. I don't know. I mean, we all have, I think, these circumstances that can kind of pop up. They just don't go away. And you do what we all probably do. You get angry, you get frustrated, you try every last thing that you can to get yourself out of the situation. But then it's like, it's still the same. It's still the same. It is what it is, and it isn't getting any better, and it seems like it isn't going to change. And maybe the worst part, the hardest part about all this is that now we have access not just to our friends' lives and see how they live. We have kind of access to, in a sense, to everybody's life and see their best and our worst, and we begin to compare. And why don't they ever have to deal with any of this? Why is it it's always my spouse that does this? Why is it, you know, my child? Why is it that they don't have these issues? This doesn't seem fair. And we wrestle and we wrestle and we wrestle, and we get to the point where we think, I'm never going to be happy again. You know, nothing good can come from any of this, and this is always going to be the way it is, and it's just hard. Anybody ever go through anything like that? Well, I did several years ago now, and I wanted to share my story with this. It's actually not just my story, it's Beth and I's story that we went through, and I hesitate to share this story because I know as soon as I share my story, some of you are going to go, or many of you are going to go, my story is way worse than that. Dave, that's not even like a thing, all right? I understand that, all right? This is just my story. I'm already going to give you the win, okay? Your story beats Beth and I's story, okay? There it is, okay? But I wanted to share my story just to say, I know what that's like to feel that way, and then I'm going to share another story that maybe you can relate to, maybe even better than mine. But Beth and I's, one of the hardest seasons of our lives was right after, in a sense, graduation, where I graduated from seminary and Beth graduated from her undergrad program. And we had been married. This is a picture. I look a lot older. My wife looks, she looks the same as she does today. It's amazing. But she gets better looking every year, I think. But that's us. I'm 24. She's probably, 22 or something like that. And we have already kind of celebrated or about to celebrate our first year of marriage because we decided that we were going to get married before we were done with school because we were ready to get married. It made sense financially, and marriage is a lot more fun than just dating, right? So we decided we're going to get married, and we decided that we were going to push through. She was going to finish her undergrad. I was going to finish my seminary on time, and we were going to spend every last moment and energy and money that we had to just get done. And I had been working for a church, and Beth and I would drive down to this church over in Columbus area. We were in Indiana. We would drive over to the Columbus area for a church plant, and they hired me to be kind of their very, very part-time intern youth pastor kind of person. And so we fell in love with this church. We fell in love with the kids in this church and the parents, and things were going really well. And the promise was, when you graduate, we'll get you here. Don't worry about any looking for a job. We'll get you here. We'll get you here. We'll get you here. That was the quote that he gave me. And so we graduated, and then I got a phone call. And the phone call started with a sigh. That's never a good sign. And the pastor said, we can't get you here. I knew this part. They had hired another staff member earlier on in the school year of mine, and they hired him as full-time. And so the elders came back and said, we can't afford another full-time person that soon. We can't get you here. And so here, Beth and I, we were, right out of just finishing up, still living in seminary housing, no money, no job, our pets' heads are falling off. No, that's Dumb and Dumber. But we were in a bad situation. And then the seminary called and said, by the way, you live in seminary housing, and you are no longer in seminary. So can you connect the dots for us? And kind of thing, like, we want you out. And so they were kicking us out, and we really had no money. One of the most humbling parts of all this, I had to go ask Beth's parents for money to pay for our first month's rent apartment somewhere in that town. And that was humbling, because I hate asking for money from people or anything. And so they did it. We got into an apartment. And my wife is so amazing that she got a job right away for the fall, because she's a school teacher, and she got a job. But they don't start paying until the fall. And so the summer was very hard for us. And I don't know, you probably can't relate to this, at least with my thing, but I have an MDiv, okay? And so I would go with a resume and say, I just graduated with an MDiv, and people who are looking to hire would say, well, what's an MDiv? And I would say, well, it's a master's in divinity. And they're like, well, what's that? And I'm like, well, I'm studying to be a pastor, and that's the education for a pastor. Oh, okay, so that means you're not really going to be here very long. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm looking for a pastor job. And they would say, well, in that case, you're overqualified. And they didn't want to hire somebody who was going to be gone in the next week, possibly. And I understood that. And so nobody wanted to hire me. And so it was very tough. I ended up working for one of my parents' friend's son, landscaping. I had hurt my arm. I didn't have money for insurance. So I couldn't even lift with one arm. It was just an ugly summer. And then finally, just before the school year started, I got a job working in a resource room at a Warsaw high school, the town that we were in. A resource room, in that particular case, was a glorified study hall for kids with special needs. And I'm not trying to, but they weren't severe special needs. It was in the sense of these kids were more behavioral problems needs than anything else. And they did not want to study, and they did not want to be quiet. And my job was to do two things, to keep them quiet and to keep them studying. And so here I am, I'm like 24 years old, fresh out of seminary, I graduated with honors, I had some awards, life was really good, and all of a sudden, everything, the rug was just pulled out from me, and I'm stuck in this study hall every day for 8 hours, day after day after day, trying to teach like these 14-year-old kids who could care less about geometry, proofs and all that, and I'm going, God, You know, this is not what I had planned. This is not what I'd studied for. This is not what you called me to do. And in that whole moment, I'm still wrestling with all the pain of, you know, Beth and I, we had really great relationship with this church. We never went back to say goodbye. They never invited us back to say goodbye. It was just really weird. It was strange. And so we had parents, so, you know, once in a while through Facebook and say, hey, you guys doing okay? And what, you know, kind of what happened? And we're like, you know, we just didn't know. And so I'm carrying around all this guilt, feeling like I did something wrong. I screwed up somehow. And now my poor wife's had to deal with this stuff. And now we're just kind of stuck. And so this whole, you know, it went week after week, month after month. And in this season, I did something that, you know, I'm not very proud of. And I did something that you might not even think that I would ever do something like this. But when you're in a moment of deep, dark kind of depression, and you just don't think always straight, you just want to get out, you just want to fix something, you know, just trying to get your hands around, have some sort of control. And so when my wife found out, I mean, she was like, I can't even believe you did this kind of thing. You know, I didn't think that you had it in you. So don't tell anybody this, but I got my wife a cat. And now what were you thinking? What were you thinking? Oh, come on. Come on, what were you thinking? No, I know. I regret it too, right? I regret it. I was like, what was I thinking? But my wife wanted a cat, and we were just, I needed something going good, and she liked a cat, so I got a cat for her. That's how ugly this was in my life, if you know me. Still regret it to this day. But you know, seriously, it was a rough year, and then the year was over. The school year was over. My wife was making enough money where I didn't have to go look for a, you know, kind of 8-to-5 kind of job again for the summer. And I kind of could focus on finding a job, a pastoring job. I got so desperate, I went to my home church, and they had a junior high director position open. The day of the interview process, we walked into the church. It's about a 2,000-person church. I'd been in this room, the youth room, about 1,000 times because I used to intern there, and I went there as a high schooler before that. I accidentally pulled the fire alarm, and that's a story for another day, but needless to say, that did not go well. The rest of the interview did not go well, and I did not get that job, and so they felt bad for me. A guy that worked there offered to hire us as basically for free. He said, I can't pay you, but if you want to come intern with me, and I'm like, well, that's good, you know, and then my senior pastor found out about that offer, and then he felt even more pity for me, and then he said, well, I'll hire you for a year as my intern, but after that, I can't promise anything. And I'm like, well, I can't move everything just for a year or whatever, and so after the summer, I had to go back to that same study hall job, and that was the lowest part, because here I was, a year had gone by, and now I'm right back, and I had nothing to show for it, and there was no light at the end of the tunnel. There was no hope of me getting a job at this point. I actually started looking at law school. I thought, maybe I'll be a lawyer. I like to argue. I can go back to law school or go to law school. And I took my LSAT stuff and got rejected from one school that I applied for. And so I'm feeling like extremely low at this point. And it's just not getting any better. I'm wrestling with God. And all this time, I'm dealing with the pain of thinking I've ruined things. I remember sitting in a pastor's office, that was the church that I was going to, and I was bawling like a baby because I thought it was my fault, and I thought, you know, I thought I screwed up everything, and there was no hope, and I wasn't going to do what I thought God was calling me to do. And in that season, I learned something, looking back now, I learned something that we are very poor interpreters of pain. We just don't interpret pain very well, because when we feel pain, we want just the pain to go away. We want the pain to end. We don't even recognize, is there anything good with this? We don't even think in those terms. We just want it to go away. And I wanted it to stop. I wanted out. I wanted to do what I thought God called me to do, the thing that I invested my whole life up to this point kind of to do. And there was no hope. Now, at this point, you might be saying, well, Dave, well, clearly the story ends well because you're this amazing pastor at this amazing church, right? And see, Dave, this is why I hesitate to share. Dave, you don't understand. That was like a 2-year period, and then it was done, and there was a light at the end of the tunnel. See, my story is this has been going on not just like 2 years, not just like 4 years, but maybe like 10 years or 20 years, and there is no light at the end of the tunnel. It is in changing. There is no happy ending to my story. It's still going the way it's going. And if that's you, I mean, just encourage you to stay with me, because we're going to look at a guy's story this morning that maybe you can relate with a little bit better than mine. His name was the Apostle Paul. And the Apostle Paul was a Jesus follower. But before the Apostle Paul was the Apostle Paul, and before he was a Jesus follower, he was a Jesus hater. He was a church hater. In fact, he had permission from his government to go and find Christians and throw them in prison. But eventually, yes, he became a Jesus follower. And yes, he became the Apostle Paul, who went around and planted church after church after church. He had amazing ministry, amazing career. He wrote half the New Testament. But in the midst of all that, he developed some sort of physical ailment that we're going to talk about in a moment, something that hindered his work in the ministry, something that wasn't going away. And through this wrestling that he has with God, there's this incredible, this key principle, this insight that we can gather from his, you know, time of wrestling that I think is going to be so helpful for you if you are in that moment right now or if you ever find yourself in that moment. So if you have your Bibles, turn with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. It's a letter that was written by Paul to a church in Corinth that he helped get started, and he would write to them to encourage them. This is the second letter that we have of him writing. And he was describing in this letter, because he's the Apostle Paul, because he had experiences like we don't have, and God revealed things to him that we just don't have, and that's why he was able to write the New Testament, he says, I had these incredible revelations, these incredible visions, these incredible things that I even have a hard time describing to people about what God has shown me. But he says, in the midst of all that kind of conversation, he says, here's what happened to me. He says this in verse 7, chapter 12 of verse 7, two, keep me from becoming conceited. Because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given me. Now, probably the better way to translate this, just to, probably better is to, in order to, or so that. It's a henna clause. It means there's a purpose behind this. And so some of your translations might have in order to. He says, in order to keep me from becoming conceited. So Paul wasn't necessarily conceited, but because of these great revelations, because he was the Apostle Paul after all, because of what he's experienced, he says, to keep me from ever becoming conceited, there was given me. Now, he uses, I think, every word he chooses is what he wants to use, and we think that God actually inspired every word that he wrote. But he says, there was given me, and he uses this Greek word because the New Testament was, he wrote in Greek. This word given is actually a very, very positive term that's used throughout the New Testament. It's a means to be given, to bestowed upon, to grant something. If Paul was at a Christmas party or at a birthday party and he was talking about giving gifts away, he would use this word. This is a very positive. I was given a gift, he says. In order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given this gift. And it's like, Paul, what is this gift? What was in the box? What did you get? He says, I got a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. It's like, whoa, time out, Paul. I think you chose the wrong word here. I think you meant you were cursed with a thorn, or you were punished with a thorn, or you were burdened with a thorn. Paul's like, no. I was given this gift. I was given a thorn in my flesh. Now, this word for thorn in the Greek cannot only mean thorn, but it also means stake. And I think in our culture today, I think we think a thorn is something a little bit that you can just pull out. I think Paul was talking about a stake in the flesh, a stake that was not going away, something that was painful, something that was not leaving him. He says it was like a thorn, it was like a stake. Just, and if you maybe have this feeling about whatever your circumstances, it's just not going away, it's not leaving, I can't shake it, I can't do anything about it, it's stuck in me, it's in my flesh. He says not only is it a thorn, but he describes it this way, a messenger of Satan. And scholars and people, you know, have debated, what is Paul talking about? Is this demonic activity? Is this a figure of speech? You know, we say things like, it hurt like the devil. What do you mean by this? And Paul doesn't tell us. But Paul says it was painful. It wasn't going away. In fact, it was so painful that it tormented me. And this word torment means you kind of beat somebody else by punching them in the face. It really means just to strike somebody in the face. So Paul says, I was given this gift. And we're like, great, what was the gift? It was a stake in my side. It was a stake in my flesh. It was like a messenger of Satan there day after day tormenting me, beating me up, and it would not leave, and it would not go away. Lots of people have wrestled with, well, what does that mean, a thorn in the flesh? What are you talking about, Paul? And there's lots of this, you know, speculation about what this was, what this physical ailment was in Paul's life. And so here's just a list of things that people maybe think it is. Some people think it's epilepsy, migraines, gallstones, gout, rheumatism, intestinal disorder. Some people think he had a speech impediment because he talked about that when I write to you, I'm really bold, but when I come to you, you know, I'm less impressive. And so people think maybe, you know, he has a speech impediment. Some people think he had an eye problem because he said, when I write, you know, these in my own hand, I write these big letters out. And so maybe they think they couldn't see very well. Some people think, I don't know if this one is true, but some people think maybe it was a besetting sin that just, you know, kept following Paul around, that he couldn't really shake. He just kind of kept coming back, you know, over and over again. See, we don't know what it really was. And I think Paul is so wise not to tell us. Because again, you know, when I share my story, most of you are going, I can top that in a day. You know, my last week was worse than what you had to go through. I get that. Paul says, listen, I'm not going to tell you what it was exactly. Because I know some of you right now going, on that list, I got like four of those right now, Paul, on my life, okay? Paul doesn't tell us. And so Paul, I think, is wise in that way. But here's what we can gather from this. Paul's thorn was chronic. It wasn't going away. It was painful. And if you ever had something painful that wasn't going away, if you ever had to live with constant pain, you know how debilitating that is. You know how frustrating that is. You know how draining that is. You can't get sleep. You can't think straight. You can't focus. You know, your emotions are, you know, just all over the place. And it was painful, but it was also humbling so that he would not become conceited. In other words, Paul really didn't really want the spotlight on this thing. Whatever it was like, I'm not really proud of it, you know, kind of thing. It's kind of embarrassing, kind of humbling to keep me from becoming conceited. That's Paul's thorn. So here's a guy, remember, here's a guy who gave his life to Jesus, who was serving Jesus, who was risking his life for Jesus in the church. Here's a guy who's doing all the right things, and in the midst of all of that, he gets something that he would call a gift, but also a thorn, something chronic, painful, humbling. And so, Paul, what do you do with that? I mean, what do you do? The good news is, Paul does exactly what you and I would do with this. Exactly the same thing that you have done when you get something that is chronic, that is painful, that is humbling, that is debilitating. He does exactly what you and I have done and would do. Here's what he says he does. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away. See, the temptation is to put Paul on this giant pedestal and call him a big superhero and this, you know, Superman kind of thing. But Paul says, listen, when I got this pain, when I got this problem, when I got this issue that wasn't going away, when my circumstances weren't changing, you know what I did? I just prayed. I didn't snap my fingers. It didn't go away. I do what you do. I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. In fact, I pleaded, he says, with the Lord three times. And I don't think it was, hey, you know, God, on Sunday, I'm, you know, this is Sunday and I'm begging. On Monday, I'm begging. On, you know, Tuesday, I'm begging. I don't think it was like 3 days in a row he's talking about. I think he's talking about three seasons of his life where he just dropped to his knees and said, God, I can't take this anymore. I had enough. Enough is enough. I can't do this. I can't take another step. I can't live another day. God, you got to do something. Change this. Take this away. I've learned my lesson, God. I've, you know, come on, God. Enough is enough already. Three separate, I think, seasons. And maybe that prayer sounds familiar to you. Maybe you've been praying that prayer. Maybe you prayed that prayer this morning. I don't know. But he says, three times I pleaded to, you know, take it away, take it away, take it away. Now, for some of you, you grew up and you were taught by people like me in places like this, the reason it hasn't changed, the reason that you're still in pain, The reason why you still have this problem, the reason why it hasn't, you know, gotten any better is because your lack of faith. And if that's what you've been told, I apologize. I don't think that is, I think that's just bad theology. And the reason I think this is bad theology is because here is a guy, and don't take offense to this, but here's a guy who maybe had more faith than all of us put together in this room, who is pleading over and over, God, take it away, take it away, take it away, and it doesn't change. It doesn't get any better for him. And so maybe you were told it's because of you, it's either your lack of faith or God's punishing you and all those kind of things, but here's a guy, I'm telling you, here's a guy who went through some incredibly intense suffering, and he pleads with God over and over again, and God doesn't do anything to his request. But finally, after the third time, here's what he says happens. But he said to me, and for some of you, this might be the game changer right here. For some of you, you might say, I've been begging and pleading, and I've gotten nothing from God. And I've been there. It's like, you can't interpret silence, and it's so frustrating. It's like, God, you're not even say anything. God, I wish you would just say something. Maybe not in the middle of the night while I'm sleeping, but some other time during the day, would you just say something to me to let me know that you hear my prayer, that you care, that you know what's going on, that you know you're doing something about this or not, you know, just give me even a no, God, would be better than nothing. Even a no would just say, hey, I, you know, recognize that you hear me, you see me, you care. It's something. Even a no would be better than nothing. And for some of you, just having God say something. And so finally, Paul, first time praying, God, please take it away, take it away. He hears nothing. Second time, God, take it away, nothing. Finally, God says something to Paul. And what God says to Paul, I think is what he's probably going to maybe saying to you this morning. Because I don't think it's just to Paul, I think he's going to be talking to you as well. He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. Maybe the best way to understand this passage is to reverse those two words, grace and power, to interchange them. You can say, my power is sufficient for you, for my grace is made perfect in weakness. Because the word grace in this context means that, means power. It means the ability to endure, to press on, to continue on, to take that next step, to get to that next day. That's what that grace means in this passage. And God says to Paul, Paul, I've heard your prayer. I've heard your pleading. He says, my answer is no. My answer is no. It is not going away. But no with a promise. No, my grace is sufficient for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. In other words, Paul, my power reaches its full strength in your weakness. My power reaches full potential in your weakness. And so because, Paul, I want to show off my power through you, the answer is no. It's no, not that I don't love you, Paul. I love you, Paul. It's no, but it's not that I'm done with you, because Paul would go on to have incredible ministry success even with all of this. But the answer, Paul, is no. But it's no with the promise that my grace will be sufficient and enough for you. Now, if you're the Apostle Paul, what do you do with this? I mean, here's a guy who's devoted his whole life, I mean, incredible faith, seen things, experienced things, and here's a guy who just gotten told no. It wasn't like, now, it wasn't just chronic that in a hope that maybe someday God would do something. It is now a permanent, chronic, permanent, no, it is not going to change, and no, there is no more hope of it changing, because I got my answer from God. It's no, it's no, it's no. It's not going to be any better. What do you do? What do you do? And this is why I think Paul, you know, we could tend to want to put Paul on this pedestal because of his response, but I think his response is simply just because his heart is so in tune with God's heart on this. And I think this is one of the reasons why you can trust the scripture to be true. It's not like made up, because you can't make this stuff up. His response to this is, it's just so out of the box for us. If you've ever gone through this, this is not our natural response whatsoever. But here's how Paul responds. He says, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness, so that Christ's power may rest on me. Therefore, in light of the fact that it is not changing, therefore, in the light of the fact that it is not going to get any better, therefore, in the fact that it is not going to go away, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to look at this differently. And I'm going to actually boast about it. In other words, when people come up to me and say, Paul, I heard about that thing that you have. You know, how's that going? I'm not going to shy away from it. I'm not going to act like it's not there. I'm not going to pretend it's better than it is. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm not going to cover it up. I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to own it. And I'm going to boldly say, yep, that's what I have. That's the issue. That's what's going on. And boy, is it painful. Boy, is it constant. Boy, you know, it can be so humbling if I think about it that way. But I'm telling you, God is using this to get his glory to him. God is bouncing this stuff, you know, and glory is going to him. God is strengthening me. God is using me. And the only way that I can get through this is God's grace in my life. And so, yes, I have it. Yes, it's going. It's just, it's awful. It's awful. But boy, I am so excited to tell you that it's God's grace that is carrying me through this. And that's God's power. It's a gift. It's a gift, in a sense. It's an opportunity for Christ's power to work through me. And so I'm not gonna think of it as an enemy. I'm not gonna, you know, be embarrassed by it anymore. I'm gonna boast about it gladly. Yep, that's what's going on. Yep, it's hard. But yep, God is right there with me every day getting me through. And then he finishes it this way. He says, that is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses. And for some of you, I know if you're in that dark tunnel and there is no light at the back and there is no light, it's just really, really dark, the last thing that you are thinking about is delighting in anything, or the word delight itself is just kind of removed from your vocabulary, off of your radar. And he says, listen, even in the darkest moments, I delight in weaknesses. And insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. Why, Paul? Why would you do that? Why? Because this, for when I am weak, then I am strong. When I am weak, when I am down, when I'm depressed, when I'm beaten up, when I'm just, you know, in the place where I think God could never use me, God shows up and says, no, Paul, you are the strongest, because now I can use my grace, my strength to empower you to do things even more beyond what you could ever imagine to do. For some of you, this might be so far from where your thinking is at right now. You might be thinking, this is impossible to do. This is so hard to do. And Paul would maybe say to you, that's why you haven't experienced God's grace in the areas where you need him the most. Because you're not looking at whatever it is the right way. See, Paul would say, I chose to look at it differently. Paul chose to see his thorn, the thing that tormented him, as a gift with both a purpose and a promise. A purpose and a promise. The purpose, verse 7, in order to, it's purpose. There was a purpose behind it. And Paul knew his purpose. That doesn't mean that we always will know our purpose with all this stuff and why we have this going on. But you can just take it to the bank. There is a purpose, because if God is in control, and I think we would all say if God is actually God, then God must be in control, and if God allowed this to happen to you, then there's a purpose behind it. But there's also a promise, and the promise is my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Now, I really wrestled with how to end this. Because I want to get us just right to Jesus. I want to just get to Jesus at this point. Because I, again, your Savior, my Savior, went to the same spot with God. In fact, the reason I'm not going to spend more time with looking at Jesus this morning is because the whole next sermon, next week, is on Jesus and his wrestling with the Father. This is the most emotional wrestling match that you can have. So come back next week for that. But here's what I want to leave you with encouragement, because I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be in that tunnel. I was putting myself there all for the last couple weeks and just remember those, it was just so yucky, so ugly, so hopeless. I want to be an encouragement to you. And for some of you, I was thinking about what would encourage me during that time. What did I need to hear? And for some of you, and again, your situations maybe are more messy than Paul's, but for some of you, you just need to hear what I needed to hear was, this is not your fault. This is not your fault. This is not your fault. For some of you, I know some of you are parents and you have, you know, kids with health issues and you think, did I sin? You know, just the whole John thing. Did I sin to someone? You know, it's not your fault. And what I needed to hear was that God is not done with you. God is not done with you. God has a plan, and this is part of his plan for you. Hang in there. Hang in there. Hang in there. I'm not promising things are going to change, but God can still use you in spite of this. And he actually uses this because of whatever you're going through. He wants to use you still. And maybe the last thing that I think we all would want to hear is that you are not alone in this. Because when you're in that dark tunnel and there's no hope at the end of the light of the tunnel, you can feel so alone. You can feel so alone. So I wrestled with how do I want to end, because I want to pray for you who are wrestling with God specifically this morning. And so my first thought was, let me just have everyone stand up who in the midst of this, just who are wrestling with God. But then I had this fear, maybe this is not a good fear, but my fear was that only one person would stand and they would feel alone even more so. So here's what I'd rather do this morning. If you have ever been in that position where you've wrestled with God, God, take this away, God, take this away, and he said no, or he said no for a long time, and you leaned hard into God, and you experienced that kind of grace and power that Paul is talking about, and you would say, that was the only thing that could get me through. Maybe even today, you're still dealing with that thing that was happening 5 years, 10 years, whatever, and I'm still leaning hard into God, but what Paul is saying is so true, it's so true, it's so true. If you are a witness to that, would you stand up to be an encouragement to those who are going through that right now? Would you stand up and just say, yep, that was me. That was me. I was in that spot. I was in that spot. I know what that's like. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. You are not alone. If you are going through this, you are not alone. And by standing up, I imagine everyone is saying, you come talk to me afterwards. I'm glad to share you my story. Yeah, it may be a little bit embarrassing at first, but I'm telling you, I am now proclaiming it boldly because God's grace got me through. You are not alone in this. I want to pray for you. And I hope that you walk out going, you know what? I don't need to try to fix this anymore. What I need more than anything is Jesus in my life, leaning harder into him, resting in him, and just trusting in the promise that comes with this gift, that his grace is sufficient. That God hasn't promised to change this. God hasn't promised to take it away, but he's promised to give me grace to get through it. And I'm going to hold on to that promise today and tomorrow and the day after that. And whether it changes or not, so be it. I'm going to boast all the more in my weakness. For when I am weak, then I am strong.